Hello, welcome back to a new episode of the Starting Excited Podcast. We are so excited to be here. I'm joined with my wonderful co-host, per usual, Mattia Segni, Spencer Shapiro. Mattia, how are you? Anything happened this week?
No, well, go on. AC Milan still first place, you know, repping it. Life is good.
Okay. Spencer, what about you?
I'm a little sad about the Madrid game, but other than that, I'm ready
for
the
podcast.
No. Okay, well, we're not all sad about that game. Some of us are pretty happy. And we'll definitely hop into that game. But I guess there's only one a real place to start off, of course, the Champions League. But in particular, one game, Juventus and Barcelona. In fact, Barcelona-Juventus was in Catalonia. And it ended in a 3-0 win for Juventus. Surprising to some extent, but not surprising to another extent. Ronaldo, two goals. Weston McKennie got a goal. It was a really nice one, too. Kind of a scissor kick volley in the air. It was nice.
It was decent.
Of course, that means with that result that Juventus topped the group and Barcelona are second place now, which leaves them with a hard next round. They have a lot of hard games that they could be drawn into. But, I mean, Mattia, we'll start off with you. I mean, what was your overall impression of this game? It was pretty one-sided, in all fairness.
It was one-sided, but I think – when you look at the lineup that Pirlo put out, I think he's finally put out like a decent looking lineup and it works for him. And of course, there were big performances from multiple players. McKennie, I think, personally was my man of the match. He had an excellent game, topped it with an amazing goal from a beautiful cross. And I think, I didn't think Juve played exceptionally well. It's just, they did get two penalties. So that's why they scored three. But I think Barca just, I mean, this is just the same Barca we see week in and week out. No identity and no spirit to win games.
Yeah. And Spencer, I mean, real quick, Barcelona are pretty down right now. I mean, what do you think went wrong for them in this game?
This game, I think, was just a continuation of what we've seen all season. They really have no fight. It's kind of a team where if Messi doesn't do something, they're not going to win. And we just saw it today. And big shout out to both Americans. Weston McKennie, of course, was man of the match, undoubtedly. An unbelievable game for Juventus. And Sergiño Dest was arguably Barca's best player, which isn't saying much, but he still had a somewhat decent performance, I have to say.
Yeah. Indeed. And I think, you know, for me, three things stuck out in this game clearly. It was Barca had no urgency. Every time Juventus lost the ball, you saw them immediately just constant pressure getting the ball right back. Yeah. Barca didn't do that at all. I think Ronald Koeman got the game completely wrong in terms of tactics. I don't think Araujo should have started. And, you know, we kind of saw Araujo was, in some sense, man-marking Ronaldo in the beginning of the game. I thought that was pretty stupid. I don't think that, you know, Pedri, to me, shouldn't be a starter. But, you know, Trincao is Trincao. But I thought he got the lineup.
What other options do they have? I guess they have Coutinho, but
I think Coutinho, for me, Coutinho was playing well in the beginning of the season. I think Ricky Puig even, you know, I think he's a great – he's a young guy. He has so much attacking mindset. And I thought Barcelona just came into this game almost going for a tie, really. They didn't, you know.
It just tells you when Koeman subs on two defenders. What was their name? Mingueza and Umtiti in, like, the middle of the second half. That just shows you, like, that just shows you the place they're in. Yeah.
Right. No, it's because Lenglet was playing horribly. You know, Araujo gave up a silly penalty. Alba was not defending at all. And, you know, I guess, you know, in some sense, I guess he kind of sent a message to the rest of the team, right, that he's willing to take you off if you're playing badly, doesn't really care about the scoreline. But in another sense, you know, I think you can maybe go for the game a little bit, but I guess not. But I guess, you know, the last thing that stuck out to me, and it's kind of stuck out to me this season, but I really think, you know, Messi's starting to become kind of an issue for Barcelona. Financially, of course, you know, he costs a lot of money, especially this year or this last year of his contract. You know, we saw the president that's going to run for president of Barcelona, or the possible president, say that he would have sold or gotten rid of Messi, sold him for financial stability, which I think, you know, is realistic. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think in the game, what stuck out to me from Messi was that I thought he showed no leadership and no team, you know, yeah, like.
Definitely. I definitely mean, agree. Yeah. It feels like Barcelona is almost uncoachable, and I told you this, Nico. Like in the middle of the game, it's Messi. You see his team's 3-0 down, and he's just walking around like it's just another day. I feel like a normal captain would be all around the field yelling at his players and showing signs of leadership, but this team just looked dead at 3-0 down. Of course, you're not really excited to play at 3-0 down, but all you need is one goal to top the group, and you can't even manage to get like opportunities. Their best chance was literally a horrible volley from Griezmann, who, to be fair, should have passed it. But it just goes to show you like this team is uncoachable. And I think a lot of people are going to blame Koeman, but definitely the blame should start revolving around not only the coach, but the players and Messi himself.
Yeah, and you're completely right. I mean, I saw when Juventus were passing the ball around, and you see Griezmann or Trincao or Pedri putting some pressure on them. And Messi just standing there in the center of the field. And I thought, you know, if you don't want to be the captain, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But I don't think you should wear the armband if you're going to have – it almost looked like he kind of was mad or just didn't care. And I know that's not true. Of course he cares, I'm sure. But, you know, I don't know. I think that needs to change. But, I mean, Spencer, real quick for Juventus, I thought they looked really good. And do you think you know, they're a top contender for the Champions League, maybe top four or five or not yet?
I mean, I think we'd need to see more consistency from them because that has been one of their main problems this season. But this was definitely a very good performance. And the difference in the teams you play when you're first and when you're second is massive. So I think it's a huge win for them. I would say they are one of the four or five top contenders, actually, because on their day, especially with the big man, Cristiano Ronaldo, they can beat almost any team on the planet, and that gives them a shot.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And, I mean, I think we can move over to another big game that happened this round of the Champions League, which was RB Leipzig against Man United. RB Leipzig ended up beating them 3-2 at home, which means that Man United are third place in the group and will be knocked out of the Champions League going to the Europa League. They looked so promising before the first Istanbul game. They were top of the group. They'd beaten PSG. They beat Leipzig 5-0. What went wrong, guys? What went wrong for Man United here?
I think everything that could go wrong went wrong. Losing to Istanbul Başakşehir was just an unforgivable mistake.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a team
that would have cleared them first.
Yeah, if they had won that game, they would be in the Champions League round of 16.
Yeah.
But they lost to a team which is mightily struggling in the Turkish league. And it's just an unbelievable result. And this result especially, the big managers have what it takes to get their team across the line in the big games.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't think Ole has that managerial ability to get the tactics right. And you have to say that 3-2 was a very generous score towards Man United.
Definitely.
This game could have been over very, very early and should have been, but Man United got extremely fortunate with
the Pogba goal. Was very lucky too.
The Pogba goal was lucky. The Fernandez penalty wasn't a penalty. But it's just, I've been saying it for a while now. Ollie is not the manager Man United should have.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I 100% agree with that. I mean, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer just isn't a top manager in the world. I think his job is way more. And again, he was coaching Olmo, I think, in Sweden or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, you're going to go to Manchester United. And the reality of it is, I don't see Ed Woodward firing him. I don't. They put a lot of money into him, he has a big contract. But he isn't, you know, if Man United want to get to the next stage, right, or you know, round of 16 in the Champions League, you need a top coach. And Ole Gunnar Solskjaer isn't that. I think against PSG, we saw that mistake with, I think, the lineup overall. And then Fred, he didn't sub off, got a red card. I think that cost him that game. They could have got something in that game. Yeah. And in this game, you know, it's it's one of those games where usually Ole Gunnar Solskjaer will actually perform, you know, when the stakes are high. Pressure, yeah. Right. But they didn't. And the reality of it is that Man United are a Europa League team. So I think, you know, to Leipzig's fairness. Sure. Right. To Leipzig's fairness, they're in because they're a Champions League team and Man United just isn't.
Yeah.
Personally, I would disagree with that. I think they may have the mentality of a Europa League team and how they play. But when I look at their lineup, I don't think the players are Europa League quality. I think Bruno Fernandes is world class. Under the right manager, Paul Pogba is one of the best midfielders in the world. David De Gea, although he's definitely dropped off of late, but he's been a world class goalie in the past. Aaron Wan-Bissaka, great. Marcus Rashford, great. I don't think these are Europa League players. I think this is definitely a Champions League squad, but at the club, it seems they have a Europa League mentality, and that's where they end up. But I don't think the players I would describe as Europa League.
Right, I agree with that, but I think, as you said, the mentality, that's the perfect way to describe it. The mentality is Europa League club right now. And, you know, in some sense, maybe it's a blessing in disguise in terms of the Premier League. We want to finish top four, of course, and they can play a little easier competition in Europa League. But, you know, to me, it's just Ole Gunnar Solskjaer again. If he wasn't on this contract and Ed Woodward hadn't backed him, he'd be fired already. But if they want to get to the next stage, they need to. And when you have a guy like Pochettino available, it's pretty surprising as to why they haven't already. And, you know, it's just another result that Man United – highly disappointed. And I think, you know, Mattia, I'll ask you, do you think Pogba should have started this game? I mean, you know, Mino Raiola came out saying that Pogba won't be there next year and he's done with United. He came onto the pitch, and when he came on, the whole game changed, in all fairness.
Yeah, I think the goal is a little bit – I don't think people should use that as an argument to justify, like, his good performance because it was a very lucky goal, and it could have even been considered an own goal, but – I think the lineup that Ole has been using in the Champions League, like putting Scott McTominay and Matic there in the center mid, I don't like if you have Pogba at your service and you can start him and he's fresh, like why not? Why are you still starting Scott McTominay? I don't think he's a Premier League starter on most teams, and he's definitely not a Champions League starter for Man United in a game like this. I think it was a very bad lineup that he put out, and he should be criticized for it.
Yeah, no, for sure. Go ahead.
Sorry. But, I mean, the thing is about Pogba, he hasn't really shown himself. There's nothing that he has done to prove that he should be a starter in this United team.
He should be starting over Scott McTominay, though.
He's a better player than Scott McTominay, but whenever you start Pogba, you don't know which Pogba's going to pick up. Yeah. Obviously, he has his world-class moments, but as a manager, in a game like this, I wouldn't want to risk it all on whether or not we'll see the Paul Pogba they signed. It's clear Ollie can't get that Paul Pogba every single week.
Yeah, and that's why, I mean, rumors have been flying around, but there's a very interesting rumor where Pogba apparently could be traded with Paulo Dybala this winter. But I think...
I mean, why would Dybala take that, though?
I mean, he hasn't been getting many starts for Juve this season, to be fair. Yeah, I think we can move on to another game. I just wanted to quickly pass over this one because it's regarding Atalanta. They beat Ajax 1-0, so they're going through with Liverpool in the group. But recently, there's been issues in the team. Apparently, Gasperini put Gomez in a chokehold, one of the senior players on his team, and Ilicic went to defend Gomez. The day later, he wanted to resign as the head coach of Atalanta, but the owner refused to let him and said he should coach the game against Ajax. So a lot of tension in that locker room. They still managed to win. Very lucky, though. Ajax was red carded, and then they scored. What do you guys foresee for Atalanta in the Champions League? Definitely not the same campaign they're going to have that they had last season. And what about Liverpool's tie? Just quickly to go over it.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, it was kind of weird because Atalanta, we know, is so attacking and doesn't really care about the defensive aspect of the game as much. But in this game against Ajax, it was the complete opposite. It defended much more than they attacked, and you know, and it worked out for them, I guess, in the end. I thought Ajax should have had a penalty earlier on in the game, and I don't think it was a red card either, or a second yellow, I guess. But you know, Atalanta are through, and that's all that really matters. But of course, I think, you know, with all the tension that's happening with Gasperini, and his star players, you know, he's just going to be happy with the result, and hopefully they can resolve that and move on, because it's a good team, and when they play the way that they want to play, they can be dangerous to moving on in the Champions League.
Yeah.
Okay, but we'll move on to Group B, which of course was intense. Went down to the final day, Inter, Shakhtar, and Madrid, Mönchengladbach. And we'll start off with the Madrid Mönchengladbach game. It was honestly like really boring, to be completely honest. Real Madrid won 2-0, could have been more. Mönchengladbach created about two chances. Yeah. I thought it was pretty surprising because Mönchengladbach, you know, they sat in, and when they went down 2-0, they sat in deeper. I really think they were just hoping for a Shakhtar Inter tie, which they, you know, they got, to be fair. But the game itself was pretty boring. I think from Madrid perspective, of course, you got through, which was just absolutely necessary. Benzema got both goals. But, you know, there's pros and cons. Benzema is the only one scoring. Continues to be the only one scoring, him or Ramos. So, you know, I'm happy they got through. But at the same time, it's still – I'm convinced because they played well against a team that didn't want to – they were just scared to do anything. But I still think they need to get everyone involved. I mean, Vinicius still can't finish years later.
Yeah.
But
this is still a good – it's a good win for Madrid. And it's always important for them, especially in Champions League. They got through and they're first place. So it's – they're in a – advantage spot. It's a statement win because as we see it with Zidane's boys, they always manage to pull through in the bigger games, and I think this is still very important for Madrid, and it's games like these that Madrid have been able to win this season that Barcelona, for example, cannot get a result out of. And so I think, of course, Mönchengladbach didn't play their hearts out, as we saw them play against Shakhtar both times, but it's still a Mönchengladbach team that's strong and can pose a threat when they want, and Madrid did well to win the game. And as for Inter Shakhtar, I think Conte's time is up, and he's this, like, literally last season in the Europa League semifinals, he beat this Shakhtar team like 3-0, I think, or even more. And so he was heavily criticized by the press, and I think it's time for him to leave. It's ridiculous how he can't get out of the group stage with this Inter team. And, yeah, that's just – it's sad.
Yeah, and, you know, again, to Inter Milan, last year, of course, last game of the group against Barcelona B team, they lost. The year before that, it was with PSV, they lost. So it's becoming a theme now. And Conte continues to have these, you know, crap excuses after the game, saying Shakhtar changed their tactics, which, you know, okay.
That's the thing. Okay. Yeah. And, I mean, why wouldn't they?
Right. And you know, again, Spencer, I'll ask you this because another touching point, Christian Eriksen, right, when he came in, Inter Milan, they backed Conte. They got him Hakimi, Ashley Young, Eriksen, of course.
He wanted they players,
all,
he got
all
them.
These guys in. He wanted Eriksen. He said he didn't have enough creativity in the midfield. Eriksen doesn't play. And when he came on for about, what was it, 10 minutes or so, they were dominating. So why doesn't he start, Spencer? Why doesn't he start, you think?
I mean, honestly, I don't know what's going on behind the scenes at Inter, but I mean, you have to think there has to be a work rate issue with him, because we've seen since his days at Tottenham, he has the ability to change the game. He has the playmaking ability. And when you start with the midfield five of Hakimi, Barella, Brozovic, Gagliardini, and Ashley Young, there isn't really much creativity in there at all. So I honestly don't know why he isn't starting. There must be some issue behind the scenes because, I mean, he was Conte's man. Conte got him. Conte doesn't play him.
Spent 20 million on him. I think the thing about Conte is that he likes his workhorses, and Barella, Brozovic, Gagliardini are all those guys that aren't going to have a big mouth. And they'll just put their head down and work. And Christian Eriksen is more of an expressive guy that won't put the work in defensively. But, of course, the game changed when he came on. And recently, like, he's just been subbing him on for a couple minutes at the end of games.
One minute.
I think it's just disrespectful. Like,
Me too.
At one point, like, just don't even put him in the game, right?
No, I agree. For I think it was one game or two games ago, he subbed him on for 1 minute, subbed him on the 91st minute. He went on and they blow the whistle. And I thought, you know, to me, that's just disrespect. If I'm Eriksen, I'm kind of confused because I'm sure he was excited going to Inter Milan knowing Conte wants to work with him. And now he can't even get, you know, 10 minutes in the game.
Not even a year later.
Right. It's really confusing to me. And sadly, Inter, you know, their financial situation can't fire Conte because they don't have the money for it. And they gave him a huge contract. Yeah. But I think he should be fired. Mm-hmm. He's just, I feel like every game with Conte is just excuses. It's excuses.
I think he should step down and refuse to, like what Gattuso did last year with Milan. I think when he stepped down, he refused to take Milan's money, so they didn't have to pay him. I think Conte should do a similar thing if he has any, if he has any dignity inside of him.
I mean, I'm not sure if Conte would do it because
I mean, yeah, he does have 12 million on the table, so I wouldn't renounce.
I don't think he believes he deserves to be fired.
Oh, of course not. So I mean, yeah, Group B will finish Madrid on first, with Gladbach second, and Shakhtar and Inter.
We can talk about the PSG game now. I think, not so much for the game itself, but the story that surrounded it. What do you guys? I mean, just to clear up for anybody listening, it's before the first game that was supposed to be played Tuesday night. A Romanian fourth official, presumably said something. Called one of the coaching staff for a member of the coaching staff for Istanbul. Pointed him out as being black. I'm not sure if that's like the full story, but apparently he said some racist remarks, and the players refused to play, and the game was postponed to the next day. PSG ended up winning 5-1, topping the group. But what do you guys think about this issue?
I think they handled it the complete right way. I think they needed to take time to kind of appreciate, like, what was going – not appreciate, but, like, acknowledge what was going on. And I'm happy they weren't forced to play when they weren't want to, and they could go out and play the match on their own terms. Mm. But I think – I mean, what the fourth official did was disgraceful, and – I hope he doesn't ref a major match again.
Yeah, they did the right thing. You got to stand up to any sort of racist behavior like that. And we've seen coaches, you know, in the past say that they'll take their team off if that ever happens. And it happens, and they don't do it. But I'm glad PSG and Istanbul both walked off. It's the right thing to do. And they got to play the next day, and PSG won, of course, comfortably. But, you know, it's all about the message. And the message that they sent by walking off, it's a great message for worldwide, even beyond soccer, for sure.
I mean, since then, I think the Porto coach, I don't know how to say his name, but the Porto coach came out and said that I don't quote, but it's along the same lines. He said, "Nowadays, everything you say about a black person is considered racist," and I think the media, I don't want to like come across as racist, but I think the media definitely blew up the issue a little more than it should have been. And I think maybe there's some misunderstanding. And of course, they did well to postpone the game, but I think, I don't know. What do you guys think about what the Porto manager said?
I mean, it's stupid. And, you know, he's just not educated enough to understand, I guess, what's a real, what's really happening, and that's on him. I hope he's able to get educated on the issue, but obviously he's not as of right now. But you know, it's just silly, it's silliness, and it's you don't want to see that. And I hope he gets the club or whatever is able to sit down with him and really tell him what's happening, because what he said is happening is not it's not what's happening. But
think it's just not really his place to determine what's
of course not
racist and what isn't.
Right, of course not.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure if he's someone who should be really speaking about it.
And we'll move over to Group A. So Bayern already went through, of course, still undefeated. Atletico and Salzburg, it was the game to get in, and Atletico played the most Atletico vintage Simeone game imaginable. They sat deep. They absorbed tons of pressure. Oblak had some great saves. last ditch tackles, and then from a set piece they score, and then on a counterattack they score. So, you know, I think this game, right, Atletico Madrid have really good players. They don't need to play like this, but this is Simeone's, you know, this is his life, this is his mind. That's how he plays, really defensive. Mm-hmm. And I think on top of that, it's interesting to see, because it's good to know Atletico Madrid can play open and attacking, or they can go back to what they always have done, you know, recent years, really defensive. And I think that makes them a threat. And what about you, Matija?
I think the problem with Salzburg, especially for this Champions League round or year, was that they let in a grand total of 17 goals compared to the 10 that they scored. And I think that's also a huge problem for Salzburg. It's their defense. And it showed in this game. But I think Simeone did well to assure the win. And of course, nobody else, I don't think anybody envisioned any other teams going through in this group. And I think the group finished the way everybody expected it to.
Yeah, I mean, and Spencer, what about you? Of course, you know, Atletico could draw with Liverpool in the next round. Would you like to see that happen?
Honestly, that's exactly what I want to see. I think there are definitely a few teams that would be great matchups for Liverpool. I'm sure the easiest to draw by far, of course, would be if Liverpool drew Barcelona, but the odds of that happening are slim. Yeah. But I think in the back of every Liverpool fan's mind, they do want some revenge against Atletico. And
yeah,
of course, the atmosphere in the return leg, hopefully it'll be back to mm-hmm. a near full capacity Anfield by late February, would be an incredible game. And I personally would love to see it.
Mm.
Indeed. And I mean, you know, we don't need to touch on Group C and E, but real quick, I'm going to ask both of you. And Spencer, I'll go first. Give me your dream draw, right? Dream draw. What do you have?
For Liverpool?
For you know, the top teams. Basically, what's your dream next round, right?
Like, if I could design it, just yeah, like some matchups it. I'd love to see.
Yep.
If you can match fix like Madrid does.
Ah.
Yeah.
I think it would be very interesting to see a Chelsea-Barcelona game. Okay. I think they definitely have a lot of history between those two teams. And, of course, with all the interesting refereeing decisions that have happened in the past in that fixture, I think it would be good for Chelsea to play a very weakened Barcelona team. For Liverpool, I'd want to see them draw Atletico Madrid. I think there would be a lot of hatred between the teams. Mm-hmm. Man City, we shouldn't even talk about them. They'll get whoever's the worst out of the second place Lazio. Teams. Most likely Lazio.
Porto. Oh, no, they can't. My bad.
But I think there are... The way they've changed it so that more teams from the top leagues get into the Champions League, I think no matter what, we're going to have some very interesting matches.
I personally think the most interesting match would be PSG-Barcelona. And, I mean, either that, PSG-Barcelona, or I also want to see an interesting matchup between PSG and Atletico Madrid. I think those two play styles could really be fun to watch, and I would really enjoy that game.
I think, you know, my favorite, my top draw would be Man City and Barcelona. I think with everything going on with Pep and Messi and City connections and
the recruit
all game. Of that, I mean, that would just be a great game to watch. And I do like PSG Atleti as well. Would be fun.
A Man City-Barcelona game, would that really be a great game to watch?
I think with the context of Messi going to City, Pep, you know, from Barcelona, coaching against Barcelona now, I think just the context of it all, it would be a good game. The score line is a different thing. You know, that might be.
Also, Pep Guardiola in the Champions League.
True.
I think he'd find a way to make it an interesting game.
Yeah, you never know. You never know what he's going to give you in the Champions League. That is so true. Okay, well, I think that does wrap up our Champions League recap. And, of course, on Monday is a draw, and we'll definitely come back through the draw and see what we think, the predictions and all that. But I guess we'll touch on some a few scores for the weekend, not all of them, but a few games for this weekend. Mm-hmm. Manchester Derby, it's in United Stadium. Mm-hmm. You know, it's Man United, just got knocked out of the Champions League, maybe some revenge, but it's Man City also that is dominant, but not, you know, not this season in the Premier League. They've had a few miss-ups, slip-ups. Spencer, what do you think this game's going to go?
I honestly think it could go either way. I think this season both Man City and Man United have been very inconsistent. I think both teams desperately need a win. Man United for obvious reasons, given their recent struggles just getting out of the Champions League, and Man City because they really haven't beaten any decent teams so far this season. I think it's going to go 1-0 to Man United.
I think it's going to be a high scoring game because both teams don't have very good defensive players. And I think both teams are going to go all out this game. Like nobody's going to hold back. And I think it's going to be a high scoring game. And I think I'd like to favor Man City winning 3-1 or 3-2.
Okay. No, I think this is going to be an intense game too. And I think United are going to be able to tip them. And I'm going to go with Spencer. I'm going to go 1-0 United. I could see a 2-1, but I think I'm going to go 1-0 United as well. Everton-Chelsea and Everton. Spencer, I mean, this is a good game.
No, I don't think it's going to be a good game. I think Chelsea are going to be able to beat Everton quite handily. I'm going to go with
Everton's form has dipped.
Okay. It's you.
I think it's going to go 3-1 or 2-0. It's going to be a two goal win for Chelsea. And it's just sad because Everton started off really well and now they're in ninth place. They've won one of their last five games. So I think it's unfortunate and it doesn't put them in a favorable position for this next game against Chelsea.
All right. And we'll shift over to Spain, the Madrid derby. This is a huge game for both Madrid and Atletico. Atletico, of course, has a significant gap on the league right now, and they can extend it. They still have some games in hand as well. But this is, of course, Madrid are definitely one of the contenders. And I think Madrid's perspective, they really need to win this game because otherwise they're starting to fall deep from Atletico Madrid in terms of points. Yeah. It's in Madrid's, you know, stadium, not the Bernabeu right now, but in Madrid's stadium. Real Madrid Stadium, sorry. Matteo, where do you have this game going? I mean, I think it's going to be close.
I think it's going to be a 1-0 win for Madrid. It's just going to be one of those games for Real Madrid.
Okay.
Yeah, 1-0. I don't think it's going to be high scoring because both teams haven't managed to, like, I don't know. I think combining Simeone's play style with Vinicius's finishing abilities, it's going to be low scoring.
Spencer, what about you?
I've picked against Real Madrid a lot recently, and I think a win here would definitely set Atletico away from the rest of the league in terms of the title and could even lead to them blowing the league wide open. But I don't think that's going to happen. I think Real Madrid are going to be able to scrape out a 2-0 victory.
Yeah, I mean, this game is really important, and I think Madrid are gonna go 1-0, 2-1.
Which
Real Madrid. I took Sevilla last week against them. To be fair, Sevilla probably should have won that game, but you know they're not playing that well. But against Mönchengladbach, even though Mönchengladbach were played like little kids, really scared, it looked good, and I think this is one of those games where Madrid are gonna win, but I don't think that's going to change Atletico Madrid from favorites for the league as a whole. We'll shift over to Sunday's games, notable ones. We have Premier League, not very noticeable ones. I guess Liverpool.
In Serie A, there's no notable games. I just want to shout out my team, you know. Sitting first place, unlike your guys' teams. So,
well,
you know, we managed to stay first. Without Ibra, without most of our players. So just put some respect on our name, please. And then Bundesliga, no big
real
games.
Quick, Matteo, real quick, to Italy. Last week, you weren't on, of course, but we were discussing you know, who we have winning it all. We're discussing Milan. Spencer took Inter Milan.
Oh, that's disrespectful.
I took Juventus.
That's
awful. I want you to channel your no bias mindset.
No bias?
You think AC Milan can go all the way and win?
Oof. Okay, so no bias. I think Milan can definitely get a Champions League spot, but they don't have exceptional depth, and I think there's other teams that are in good form, like Inter right now, like Juve, who we're picking back up, who are looking like real threats to our halfway to our winter trophy, to our winter Serie A title. But at least we can claim that, you know. So I think they're definitely contenders, but I don't know. Knowing Milan, I don't know. Just respect us, please. We haven't been in this position for a long time, so you know we have to take it one game at a time.
But, all right. Well, I think, you know, I'd love to see AC Milan go all the way. I don't think they will away, but you know, maybe, never know. I guess, you know, to be fair, we'll touch on Spencer's team, Liverpool and Fulham. Spencer, do you think anything can go wrong in this game for Liverpool, for Fulham to get something out of it?
I mean, Fulham, they started off the season terribly. They picked up slightly, you have to say. They had a good result last weekend, of course. Two weekends ago.
Yeah.
Sorry, not last weekend, against Leicester City. And there is no reason to think Liverpool should lose this game, but it's always a possibility with how they've been playing this season. There was that horrible Brighton result. Anything can happen with VAR.
Mm-hmm.
But this is not a game Liverpool should drop any points in.
Okay. I mean, yeah, I agree with you. I don't see Fulham doing much against Liverpool.
I think Fulham's going to get a point. I think they're going to split the cookie. I believe in the Frenchman. So? I believe in the French goalkeeper. Areola, World Cup winner, you know. You know, put some respect on his name. Third string World Cup.
He was at Madrid last year.
String on the French team, 2018. So, you know, anything can happen.
All right. Well, I think, you know, in all honesty, I think that does kind of wrap up our episode. But I'm going to ask you two a question I was thinking about the other day. And I'll put you on the spot so you can change it in the next episode or whatever. But I'm going to ask you a question, and no one can argue. All right? It's like a yes or no question. Or not yes or no, but it's an opinion question. I want you both to name, and I'll go to, since you've been born, the most underappreciated player and the most overrated player. Or underrated.
So underrated. Okay. Can I go first?
Sure.
So underrated has to be Olivier Giroud. Of course, man's literally carried Chelsea against Sevilla 4-0. Nobody's ever scored that many goals against in Sevilla, I think. So, I mean, that's just insane. Giroud goes unnoticed. People don't, like, talk about him enough. Werner always gets the minutes. People talk about Tammy Abraham more than Giroud. But I think Chelsea fans can really appreciate him. And he's extremely underrated, you know, World Cup winner without a shot on target. But that doesn't matter because he knows his role and he plays it well. An overrated player. I think there's a lot of overrated players this season. I think I like to go with players like, I mean, there's multiple of them, but I like to go with players like Gabby Jesus, Tony Martial, Firmino, Coutinho.
Those three guys like overrated. I think they're rated pretty fair. Maybe Martial.
I don't see one that really sticks out a lot.
Okay.
Think about it for 1 minute. Spencer, we'll go to you real quick.
Okay, for me, underrated, I was torn between two. One of them may surprise you, but
don't say an American.
I'm gonna go. For me, it was between Harry Kane and Luis Suarez, but I'm gonna
underrated?
Go with Suarez. He's gotten a lot of the accolades, but what he's done for. He's always taken the backseat to Messi. He's never came close to winning the Ballon d'Or,
even though.
But you think he's underrated?
I think the work he did for Barcelona is underappreciated. He was clearly the third fiddle out of MSN, and I just don't think all the work he's done being willing to take the back seat to those two is as appreciated, because on Liverpool he showed he was unbelievable, but he did what very few pros would be able to do and sacrificed his ego to play next to Lionel Messi, which is the reason why MSN was able to work and also the reason why it fell apart when Neymar couldn't do the exact same thing.
Yeah. What about overrated?
Overrated, it's tough. It's a very tough question.
I'd like to point one out. I think this season, Messi's been a little bit overrated just because of Messi.
Agreed.
I'm going to go with Paul Scholes for overrated. I don't think he's on the...
He's underrated.
Liverpool fan.
Nobody rates him around the world. Only Man United fans.
Yeah, but I don't think he belongs in the conversation with Stephen Gerrard and Frank Lampard.
All right,
and for that reason, I'm going to say overrated.
All right, well, we said, you know, we won't debate it, but it's criminal. I guess I'll go. I think underrated, and you guys are going to hate me for this. I think Danny Carvajal has been criminally underrated. He's been a Madrid starter for years now, but I never hear him in the top three or whatever right backs. I never hear that his name and that he's been consistent. He's still consistent. He's been injured this season, but he's still consistent. He's still a starter. Mm-hmm. And I think he's been such an important part of that defense with Madrid, and I just don't think he gets enough respect at that position. Overrated. Mm-hmm. I think you guys are going to disagree with me on this one. And I'm not going to go, you know, these two guys I'm going to name, of course, Carvajal and this next guy are pretty recent players. But I think N'Golo Kante has been very overrated.
Okay, so that marks the end of our podcast, guys.
No, real quick.
The moment you brought it up, I knew you were going to say Kante. You told me last Saturday. I called you an idiot. You say it today, you're an idiot.
Here's the thing. I mean, he's a great player. He's a great guy. Everyone loves N'Golo Kante. But, you know, when he was a few years ago the best CDM in the world, undoubtedly, I always thought to myself, this is a little much. I mean, he's good. But now, you know, this season, last season, he's been moved out of that position to his fairness. But you know, this where do you rank this guy now? I don't rank him in the top.
The thing about it is that I don't think people really talk about Kante that much. He's just a kid that shows up to the Chelsea games and plays. Like, nobody really pays attention to him anymore.
It's true.
And I think he's definitely regressed in form, even though he's still in his prime years right now. He's regressed, and I think personally he should look for a move out next summer. But how can you, like, dude, that's just offensive, man. What did Conte ever do to you to provoke that statement?
But what about you, Mincy? What's your overrated player?
Messi, that's who I was saying. Just for this season. I don't want any hate, but this season. Just because he's Messi, what do you mean?
I think I agree with you on Messi. But what about, give me another one.
I think Dybala's overrated.
Okay, that's fair.
Yeah. And I also think Ronaldo's overrated. Lewandowski's overrated. Harry Kane's overrated.
Well, all right. Well, that's not fair.
All right.
Yeah, no, I think Messi is a good one in some sense.
For this season.
Right. All right. Well, I think that does, you know, effectively wrap up our episode. We'll have maybe a few more fun questions like this on future ones. But thank you guys for listening. Per usual, again, Monday, Champions League draw. We definitely can't wait. Definitely going to talk about it next week as well. And we'll see you guys in the next one. Thank you guys for listening.
Thank you.